Hi, I'm Piper.
And I'm Erin.
Welcome to Off the Tracks podcast, where we explore what it means to do law differently. Today's episode is in partnership with Lawbroker, legal's first customer experience platform powered by lawyers. Lawbroker is a recommendation and matching platform that helps drive new business to solo and small practices throughout Canada. With its mission to simplify the accessibility of legal services, Lawbroker has built a platform that mimics everyday consumer applications, bringing familiarity and convenience to the legal industry. As a lawyer, you make the first move, opening up an entirely new revenue stream for your practice, all while putting you in control of your own demand.
Today, we are joined by Lena Yousefi. Lena is a multi-award-winning family lawyer, accredited mediator, and the founder of YLaw, the fastest-growing female-led law firm in Western Canada. She has been chosen as one of the top 25 most influential lawyers in Canada, one of Business in Vancouver's top 40 under 40, and voted as the number one top-rated Vancouver divorce lawyer in BC. She has won over 90% of her family law cases from 2013 to present. In 2020, she was named by Lexpert as the only family lawyer in Canada to become the rising star of the legal profession. In 2022, she was chosen as one of the top 50 changemakers in Canada by the Globe and Mail and had YLaw ranked in the top 10 innovators list of Canada. A Week in Her Life was recently featured on BBC. She has been at the forefront of better change for mental health within the legal profession. She is the first lawyer in Western Canada to implement four-day work weeks for a firm of her size, which has been proven to be a major success. She actively recruits pregnant women, single mothers, LGBTQ plus individuals, visible minorities, and people of color to her law firm. So we are so excited to hear more about how you run your practice and how you've gone to where you are today. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Lena, we are so excited you are here. I know that Erin and I have been such huge fans of yours for a long time. Honestly, if someone were to hack Erin and our LinkedIn accounts, they would just see us send your posts back and forth about how cool you are. So we are so grateful that you have joined us. It's honestly like no one needs to go look because I'm completely telling the truth. So Lena, we would love to hear a little bit more about how your career has evolved over time and how you've sort of gotten to where you are at this moment in your life.
I think a lot of failure, you know, like a lot of failing and making mistakes and you know, just realizing that I'm just an outsider. I've always felt like an outsider and I've been an outsider. The only difference is that, you know, I'm proud of being an outsider now, whereas before I was ashamed of it. So when I was ashamed of it, I was trying to kind of like box myself into what, you know, what would be acceptable of, you know, a lawyer my age to do. And, you know, it was killing my soul. You know, like I remember like one day, like I was on, you know, I found like I was on five or six different like anti-anxiety and depression medications, but I knew that I'm not a depressed person. It just felt so unnatural. And the more I did it, the more I felt like, no, I'm actually like my, you know, I can't kill my soul. My soul is going to kill me if I don't give it what it needs. So I had to lose my fear and go after what felt like impossible back then, you know, because my confidence wasn't at an all-time low. And I was told that I would never, ever be able to get to where I am. So I think in a nutshell, it was, you know, it was just like losing my fear, being okay with failure, and most importantly, having somebody, even just one person, to support me. I had one person who supported me, and that was my dad. Everybody else was like, no, you're making a big mistake. I think it's very important to have that one person. So
I couldn't agree more. And Piper has definitely been one of those people for me where she has always been someone that I can turn to when everything else feels very scary. And it's definitely nice to just at least have one person in your corner cheering you along against all the odds. So I love hearing about that. So can you tell us a bit more about what led you to choose law as a career and how you ended up as a lawyer?
So I was... It's very funny. So I was kicked out of university, basically. I had failed. I think my average GPA was a D minus by the second year of university. And, you know, I was kicked out. And at the same time, my sister, who was always an honor roll in university, you know, the year I got kicked out was the year, you know, she graduated as, you know, a Golden Key Club member at UBC. And I was very, very lost and confused. And, you know, at that point, everybody was like, okay, this is the good sheep, this is the bad sheep. And, you know, I'm not going anywhere, she's going everywhere. And she was actually about to, in a couple of years, she was going to go on and become a doctor. And she, in fact, is a doctor today. I remember, like, one day I just woke up, and the same pain that had made me fail my grades and be depressed and feel like I couldn't do anything with my life, that same pain had now taken on a new kind of personality. And now it was to just jolt me from, you know, 0 to 100. So I just woke up and I said, okay, I need to get from A to B very, very quickly. Like, I need to prove everybody that everybody's wrong. And, you know, I had, you know, three options. I could become a doctor, I could become a lawyer, or I could become an engineer. I'm very good at arguing, obviously. So I decided to become a lawyer. And again, it was just everybody thought that I'm crazy because I couldn't even finish my undergrad. I actually had to pick up my luggage, go and speak to the dean of UVic, and basically, like, make a pledge that I'm going to get straight A pluses for the next 3 years, because that was the only way I was actually going to have a chance to get into law school, because you had to mix A pluses with a bunch of Fs and get maybe a B plus or an A minus average at the end. So that's what I did. I got A pluses for the next 3 years, and magically I applied to every single law school in Canada because I didn't think I would get anywhere, and I got into 11 out of 12. But I went back to the university that gave me a chance, which was UVic, and the rest is history. I became a lawyer. My sister became a doctor. We actually, the beauty of it was that in the same year, in the very same year, she graduated from med school, I graduated from law school. So we took very, very different paths. And we actually started our professional careers in the same year.
Wow. I love how, like, your paths so, like, vividly diverged. Mm-hmm. And then you ended up coming back together, like, in different ways. Like, both of you on your own path, you got there on your own journey. And I think that's, like, really at the crux of what we talk about here on the podcast, is about how, like, sometimes things fall apart, other things fall together, and it's like a lot of what you learn along the way. And in reading about you and your career and all of the failures and successes that have brought you to this point, I think that it's really interesting that you've gone from working at Taco Time to founding and leading a law firm ranked in the top 400 fastest growing companies in Canada by the Globe and Mail, and the top 500 companies by the Canadian Business. Mm-hmm. And so what is one thing that has remained constant and consistent throughout your journey to this point in your life and your career from those days back in your teenage years to now?
The fact that I was and always will be a rebel. Like, I'm an innovator, I'm a rebel. Like, I don't try to box me in, and I make mistakes. You know, I've been fired from the most, like, I think, entry-level jobs just because I can't follow structure and routine. I hate rules. Like, ask me to, like, make a binder and I'll get an F at that. I'll have, like, five different judges yell at me. But tell me to come up with a vision and I'll do it, like, tomorrow. And that's one of the reasons why the future is so bright for me, because I feel like, you know, the one thing is, like, as lawyers, we're almost, like, taught that there's, you know, one, two or three ways of, you know, being a lawyer or, you know, functioning. But the beauty of law and the legal profession is that there's millions of opportunities in it that a lot of us don't even pursue, because we're kind of taught not to think, not to dream, not to pursue. You know, like, I was just telling one of my colleagues here, like, the legal tech is Greenland. You know, like, we're behind every other profession. And, you know, if we have one or two lawyers who, you know, instead of working at the big law firms, you know, billing away, came up with a vision to make lives easier by, you know, like making law more efficient and more accessible, we could be getting to such higher places. But for some reason, I don't know why, we're so creative when it comes to our arguments, but we're not creative when it comes to our own careers and jobs. Like, I think the biggest reason is that we're afraid. We've taught to be afraid. And so my number one aim in life is to be a rebel. And that means being unafraid. That's the constant.
Wow. I was typing to Piper as you were saying that. And I said, like judging a fish on how fast they can run or whatever the saying is, because I'm terrible with sayings. I always mess them up. I think Piper is correct in saying it's don't judge a fish by how they can climb a tree. But I think that really ties into what you were saying at the beginning. It's like, okay, if you tell me to do this kind of task, I'm not going to get it done very well because that's not what I excel at. But if you tell me to do something that's within my wheelhouse, I will excel and I will be able to produce amazing results. And I just think that that's so important because there isn't one way to practice law or one way to be a lawyer. And you have to find the tasks that you enjoy. And if you don't like routine, then a 9-to-5 job at a firm is not going to work for you. So it's really nice to hear how you were able to sort of realize that and be able to take that and apply it to how you're running your business and making it work for you. But running a business is definitely not something that we are taught in law school. And you have incredible business knowledge and acumen. What led you to start Why Law, and how do you run or split your time between running the business side of the firm and practicing law?
To be completely frank with you, like there's so many things wrong with the way that law firms are run that it's become my goal and my calling to change that. So I've reduced my legal work quite a bit. Like I still have a few cases, but I'm trying to focus more on running the law firm because, you know, what we're not doing is, you know, you just touched upon it. Humans need to evolve in every way. And if we're not allowed to evolve, we'll either be sad, we'll leave, or we'll try to force a situation that just doesn't feel natural, right? So that's what I feel a lot of lawyers are dealing with. You know, the problem is not with you and I or the next lawyer being lost. There's no such thing as being lost. The problem is that the firms are not cultivating an environment where the lawyer can evolve to who they want to be, right? So like I hire people, I'm a visionary myself, but I'm horrible at organization. I'm horrible at reconciliation. I'm bad at looking at, you know, like the little fine prints in contracts, but I need the lawyers who get some sort of an endorphin rush in their brain when things like reconcile and numbers make sense. We need those lawyers, right? The problem is a lot of law firms try to box us into a certain position to the point that the only value that we get out of our career is the money that we're making. And they did, Harvard Business Review did research on this, you know, what keeps people in general at their jobs. And money only plays a 2% impact. I thought it was going to be 20%, but it's 2%. The rest of it is feeling like you're a team. And one of the things that a team entails is evolution. People working with you, not telling you what to do. People accepting you, you being loyal, you know, you being loved, you being trusted and trusting other people. Mutual respect. Those are the things that I feel are missing. Like the focus has been on billables and the amount of money brought in, and it's much less about the evolution of the person behind the lawyer. So I've gotten into the business of law in such way that when a lawyer comes in through our doors, the first thing we do, we ask, where do you want to, you know, what's your intent? What's your purpose? Why are you here? And, you know, where do you see yourself being in 1 year, and how can we support you getting there? Instead of putting ourselves ahead of you. And for that reason, that's one of the main reasons why, you know, like Why Law has been one of the fastest growing, because of that, the shifting the value to the people who work for us rather than, you know, the value of what value they bring to us. which is really the ingredients to success. So, you know, that's a long answer to your question, but that's what really excites me every day. I'm doing more of that, less law, because there's already a lot of good lawyers out there. I don't need to compete with them.
Lena, I think so much of what you're saying is applicable to life in general. When we think about like what we're good at and what we really can hone in on and be like the best at, when we wake up every day, when you think about any friendship, any romantic relationship, any work relationship with your colleagues or employees or employer, you always kind of negotiate in a sense to like do what you're best at. So for example, when Erin and I work on the podcast, there are some tasks that I always do and there are some tasks that she always does that I would never touch with a 10-foot pole. And that's the reason that this can work, is because we play to what we're both good at. And when you do that, like, we're excited to do those things. And the same thing in all of the other relationships in our lives. And I think that that's so important. And like, you really hit the nail on the head there, because that's applicable everywhere. When you get to wake up and do something you're good at, it's something that you can look forward to. And it makes you want to produce your best work, and not only for the organization you work for, but also for yourself, which then in turn, as you're saying, benefits the organization. So it's so clear why law is so successful. It's because you're giving people the space and the room and the place to grow, to find what they do best, and then to do that work.
Thank you. And you know, like, the one thing that I think it may feel like a monumentous task to just basically make everybody happy and allow them to do what they love, because at the end of the day, you have a business and it needs to make money. But the key is, based on like scientific research, is that for people to feel absolutely gratified at what they do is to spend 20% of their everyday doing something they love, only 20%. So if a business owner allows an employee to spend 20% of their day doing what they love, and explore that with them, the chances of that employee leaving is slim to none. It doesn't need to be 80% or even 40%, only 20%. But the moment it drops under 20% is when the chances of leaving and not feeling gratified goes up. So that should speak volumes of how lawyers feel at their, you know, at some of their workspaces, given the news that's coming out about, you know, lack of associate retention and things like that. It's that they're not even being given 20% to be themselves. And that's a problem.
No, absolutely. And so, Lena, when you talk about that, some people listening might not realize that YLaw has implemented a 4-day work week. Yeah. And so can you talk about what that decision-making process was like for you and how, if at all, it's impacted the firm as a business?
So I have a toddler, and you know, she was born prematurely, like 2 months earlier. And so I literally, my water broke as I was sitting in a lawyer's meeting. I was still working. So I didn't really have a mat leave. Like, it was a long weekend. I gave birth. And then on Monday, like, I just, you know how it is with birth. Like, I had plans to go on mat leave, but I couldn't because I had hearings and things like that. So yeah, for the first couple of weeks, I didn't go to work. And then I started going like 1 hour a day, 2 hours a day. It was never a leave. And I, you know, I have a problem with that too, when women are forced to choose between, you know, you can do something in the middle just to not leave altogether. But that's another story. I eventually worked my way after a year and a half to 4 days a week. And I loved it because I had that day with my daughter. Then I think one night I was just having wine and cooking food. And I was like, you know, I'm working 4 days a week. I feel so much better. Why not everybody else? So the first thing I did is I accepted that I'm going to lose money. And I said, that's okay. That's going to come in exchange for incredible loyalty, retaining really good talent, better mental health, you know, just making people happy. You know, like, it's not always about the money. And by the way, I think law firms have some of the highest margins of profit. Like, past a certain point, I can't conceive of why we would work people to the bones when we're already making a lot of money. I just can't conceive of it. So yeah, I was making a lot of money. I could afford to lose 10%. So I went back to my people and I said, you know, here's what I'm thinking. And the response was unbelievable. We've had zero turnover since a year and a half ago when we implemented it. But what was fascinating is that are billable, the same lawyers are billing more, working 4 days a week. Profits are, revenues have increased by 60%. Profits have increased by 50%. We've doubled our size. Like, we went from 7 lawyers when we implemented to now 16 or 17 lawyers, actually more than doubled our size by now. So there's been zero loss, zero. And what's been gained is just this like phenomenal, like magical thing. And I know it doesn't make sense to an outsider saying, how can you work one day less and then, you know, make more? And I still don't know the answer to that. It just happens. I think people get a lot more, you know, it's another concept of, you know, our firm working towards a purpose. Everybody wants this to be successful. So everybody's working extra hard to get it there. And we're never going back. And we're just getting applications that I never imagined getting, you know, from some incredibly talented people because they appreciate that. So I just hope that more law firms follow that example and are not afraid of implementing it.
Lena, I just have a quick like logistics question that's really rooted in curiosity. Does everybody work the same 4 days, or is it like somebody takes Monday, another person takes Wednesday, like, or is everybody like the firm is closed on a specific day?
Very good question. Everybody asks this. I'm going to start with, this is not a fairy tale, right? So you have to really plan this thing. Otherwise it's going to fall apart. It's very risky. So we all try to take Wednesdays off. But on Wednesdays, we have 3 staff. Like the phone lines are always open. We've actually increased our business hours from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. 5 days a week, because 3 people work on the Wednesdays where we're supposed to be off. And only those 3 people take another day off. They take Fridays off. Now, with lawyers, it's in the code of professional conduct that if something is urgent, you need to go to court, you go to court. If you have to work 7 days a week, you work 7 days a week. So the concept of 4-day work weeks, it's not that everybody takes every Wednesday off. You know, like basically our lawyers take somewhere around 50 to 70% of Wednesdays off, and the other 30%, they come to work at least a few hours. With our support staff, they take more. They pay somewhere between 80 to 90%. But again, if something is urgent, we come to work. That it's not a right to take the Wednesday off. It's a privilege. And when I surveyed our people, like the uniform response was not that they're happy because they get a day off. Their happiness comes from having the choice to take it off, having the liberty, knowing that they're not expected at a certain hour. They can work from home. They can come to the office for an hour. They can attend their appointment. So it's a much more fluid and flexible concept than is portrayed in the media, that, you know, you've gone, like, you've literally cut out a day. That's not what we do. If we did that, we would be out of business, especially when it comes to client inquiries. You can't close down a law firm on a business day. It just doesn't happen. So
yeah, that is really interesting. And I, as a solo lawyer, that is the one benefit that I love, is that I no longer have to fight for the evening appointments for the dentist or for hair appointments, or, you know, any of the appointments that you have to take when you work a traditional 9-to-5. So having that day off in the middle of the week would just be so helpful that, yeah, if you don't have a hearing that day and you need a dentist appointment, and you can just, you know, have a longer day at home that morning and then go to the dentist or the hairdresser. And then if you, you know, have a hearing on Thursday and you need to prep, then you can stop by the office. But it's the ability to sort of craft the day as you need it and not feel like, okay, well, I don't even have any work really I need to get done today, and it's a beautiful Wednesday and I'm stuck at this desk, right?
Like, exactly.
It's that choice and freedom, which
absolutely
is just so refreshing to hear. And I've loved following along with your posts about how it was going. And I remember when you first posted about it, it was sort of like a trial run to see how it was going to go. And it's so nice to hear that it's worked, it's working, and you guys are excelling with it. It's so great to hear. Another thing that Piper and I messaged about was when you guys took your firm vacation. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't even like family law, but sign me up. I'm about to learn everything that there is to learn about this. This looks amazing.
We'd love to have you on board.
Yeah, I'll just do a quick primer. But can you tell us more about that? Because that just sounds so fun. And there were kids on the trip. It looked like everyone was invited. It just looked like tons of fun. And again, coming back to the money thing, it's like, oh my gosh, how are you able to do that? But it's like, sometimes it's like, how are you not able to do that? Because it just seems like such a great team building experience. And we'd love to hear more.
I mean, it's like we have an honor system at Wyla, right? Like people need to meet their targets. They need to work extra hard so that we have enough money to spend on an all-inclusive, all expenses paid, you know, vacation to, you know, Las Cabos, which is where we went. But yes, it was a lot of money. I think it was like $50,000 or $60,000 that we spend, and, you know, spend. And then it's not just the money. It's the fact that 16 lawyers are not billing for an entire week. That's even more expensive because you're losing money both ways. But I didn't even imagine in my wildest dreams how vital this was for us, because we spent 7 days bonding with each other. And when you bond at that level, like the long-term gain that we each obtained, you know, like the love and appreciation, the sisterhood, because we are like 96% women, like three token guys at Wyla. It was phenomenal. And like, I came back, I was like, no, we're never going to do this again. Like it was a lot of money. And like, you know, 4 months later, we're already trying to like taking polls out to like where the next destination is going to be. It's worth every single penny. Like I think people look at business as if we can separate the human from the business. And I think the human is an integral part of the business. So we need to create a family. And to create a family is to have those, you know, dinner time, you know, sitting at the table and spending time together. You know, we can't be spending every day just giving each other tasks and ordering each other around. Like, and you actually touched upon this point. We do family law. Our job is extremely difficult and stressful and negative. We're dealing with extreme stress. So we do need to have a family inside a good environment and you know, a bonding that makes us feel supported when we're kind of, you know, burnt out after a child and things like that. So I, again, you know, it goes back to to my theory that law firm make an outrageous amount of money if they do business right. You know, you have to have good business practices, and it's worth it to invest some of that on your people. It really is.
So Lena, in the very first question that we asked, you talked about like over time losing your fear, like getting rid of fear and abandoning fear. And I think my question for you is like, do you think that other businesses and other law firms aren't following your lead and aren't adopting these practices because they haven't lost that fear yet? Do you think that there's other reasons? Like, you clearly are having so much success with being an innovator, not only in the legal profession, but this would be innovative in any professional sphere. But yet we don't see other law firms, companies of your size, companies of larger size, adopting these practices. And what do you think it is that's holding people back? Or what do you think it is that they don't understand?
I'm going to be totally frank with you. I've thought about it a lot. And my theory, which you don't have to agree with, is that the business of law was created by men and it's run by men. Even at the largest firms, you know, if a woman can become an equity partner, which means that, you know, she's going to make a lot of money and she might have a say in some decisions. But she, as far as leadership power goes, women do not have that as much as they should. So there is a yin to a yang, right? Like, and I'm not trying to generalize, but, you know, if you look at the primal male versus female, you know, the male is the aggressor, he's the breadwinner, he's there to, you know, maximize on gain. And the female sometimes is the nurturer, is the compassionate, the empathy, the powerful, the strength, you know, that comes in a different way. And then you mix these two energies and you get a balance in nature, right? And again, this is in the simplest forms. I'm not just talking about humans, I'm talking about animals. What's happening, I don't think it's the fear. It's the masculinity of law. It's the traditional practices that were designed by men and run in a way that is catered to men, but women are expected to fit the mold that they just naturally don't fit. So when people approach me, when law firms approach me to implement 4-day work weeks, guess who it is? It's women who come. Like, it's the female advisor to the male law firm owner. It's the HR lady, you know, or it's the female sole practitioner. I rarely get it from men, because men's brain sometimes it's not equipped to understand what females do. And the reason I think why we're getting a lot of we're getting a lot of traction with YLaw is that I'm introducing feminine business practices, which are actually taking all the powerful females that are supposed to go out of the legal practice and bringing them back in, and we're becoming powerful and strong. And my only hope one day is that we can join forces instead of me just being, you know, female focused and them being male focused and acting like they're female focused, but they're not, because they're not allowing feminine practices to be introduced. So if we allow that, we're going to excel. But the fear of females and feminine practices is what's causing the problem. It's not just general female.
Wow. I love everything you just said. That was amazing. And we totally agree. And it is so interesting to hear you summarize that much more eloquently than I could. But I just find that so interesting to sort of conceptualize it in that way. And we really appreciate the way that you are building your law firm and actively changing the way that your sort of natural ecosystem and your firm operates by how you have been hiring women and marginalized groups and even people who are pregnant. And that is something that people are always shocked about. I had maybe 2 weeks ago, like 9 inquiries or something like that about pregnancy discrimination. Yes. And when I tell people that there are still pregnancy discrimination in the workplace, people are appalled and shocked. And I'm like, no, it's alive and well.
It's a thing.
Yeah. I've heard people say, you know, oh, I told my employer I was pregnant. And they said, well, that's very inconvenient. And here you are hiring people who are pregnant. So it's not inconvenient. So can you tell us a bit more about how you started these practices and how you've incorporated this into your practice?
I think it's just focusing on long-term relationships and not short-term. I think, again, like the short-sightedness of things make people feel like, you know, they see a pregnant woman, they think she's a liability because she's going to go on mat leave, and then there's going to be this like empty space, and then, you know, she's not going to come back for a year. So why should I start from the beginning? Like, the way I look at it is that, you know, here's a human who in about, you know, 9 months is going to transform into 5 times who they were before they gave birth, because you just develop such incredible talents and strength and resilience, you know, as a mother. And I want to take advantage of that. Of course I do, as a business owner. So allowing them to come in and be appreciated and feel like they're accepted. And then, you know, we also kind of like design a coming to back work process where it's not that, hey, you need to leave and let me know when you're ready to come back. It's just that, okay, like, I know you want to keep your identity even after you had a, you know, you had a birth, and you still want to, you know, feel like, you know, you're not going to be boxed in at home perhaps. So, you know, 3 months later, do you want to start working a couple hours a week? Three hours a week, and then, you know, kind of like increase that as we go. So I've seen the women that I've hired who were pregnant or are on mat leave has been some of the most loyal employees I've had, some of the most profitable people I've had, and some of like and they also experience much better mental health. That because they get that balance and they can have their family life. So I just think that they're assets that they're worth investing in, whereas, you know, me looking at them as a liability, which my articling student, you know, told me, a partner at a big firm said, you know, when you come for your articling interviews, don't even wear a wedding band, because they're going to think you're going to get married and you're going to have a kid. Like, he verbalized it. This is one of the big like 7 sisters. It's not even hidden. Like, some people are actually openly talking about it. So yeah, it's a thing. And again, my aim is to, you know, whatever their loss, all these ladies can come to my firm, I'll happily take them on.
I know. And I mean, neither Aaron and I, or I are married, but when we were in law school, I remember hearing that as well. And I also remember being told, like, you have to wear like a skirt, like a pantsuit skirt to your job interview. Like, don't wear the pants, wear the skirt. And so these things are very much alive and well. I remember a good friend of mine in law school was a bit older than me, and at an age where I guess people really expected her to be having children. And I remember her being asked about it in an interview. And I think people think that these things don't exist anymore. And they do. They're maybe just more well hidden or under the surface. And yeah, I think it's just, there's still a lot of room to grow and a lot of room to change in the profession. So Lena, I guess something that Aaron and I talk a lot about, like in our personal life as friends, is so often, like online, and whether that's LinkedIn or Instagram or whatever it might be, we see the highlight reel of people's lives. Mm-hmm. And I think, like in my life, I really try and be transparent. Like, what you're seeing is just the highlight reel.
It's
like,
not what it is.
Yeah, you're not seeing me like on my like bedroom floor, like in sweat, surrounded by stress, like having a freak out over something that's gone wrong. And so I guess, Lena, like we've talked a little bit about some of the earlier setbacks that you faced, mm-hmm. whether it was school or whether it was being an outsider. But what is a significant setback you faced in your legal career? And like, what have you learned from it throughout this entire process of growth over the span of a multi-year and award-winning career?
The biggest setback, I think actually, once I'm trying to think of it. Okay. Since getting kicked out of university, that was like my biggest like career setback, if you want to call it. But once I started like becoming a lawyer, I think things became better. But I think the biggest setback happened 3 months ago, where I was you know, when people say, you know, like it's just a job, you know, separate yourself from the job. But you know, like there's this. I did this case. I won on trial level, and then the other side appealed it, and the appeal court overturned the trial judgment. And I remember like looking at it and just being like, this is so wrong. And I got physically sick because of the injustice of it. You know, I felt like you know, just very quickly, it's, you know, like when you're divorcing, things are 50-50. This was a case where they were only married for 2 years. It was kind of obvious that the woman, you know, had married him for the wrong reasons. He was quite wealthy. And then, you know, she delayed the trial for 4 years. And during 4 years, you know, the assets went up by hundreds of thousands of dollars. So at trial level, I was able to exclude the growth, but on appeal level, they included the growth, meaning, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of windfall. But what really killed me was that this concept that this is not helping women, it's setting us back, because it's motivating us, you know, in a way to get married and then sit back and just, you know, reap the benefits just because, you know, somebody has the assets. Like, you know, to me as women, we need to kind of like create our own future. But anyway, that happened. I was, you know, just in bed for like 4 or 5 days. And then I was like, nope, I'm not giving up. So we just recently filed a leave to the Supreme Court of Canada application. I don't know if I'm going to overcome the setback yet. Hopefully, you know, if we get permission to argue, I'll definitely let you know. But you asked about a setback, and that's the first thing that came to my head. So there you go. There's a story there.
Well, I'm excited to hear if you make it to the Supreme Court. I think that would be amazing. And I would log on from the virtual link if they let us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thanks.
I guess on a happier note, what is one of your favorite memories or proudest moments of your career? Do you have any cases that sort of stand out to you? I guess that one kind of is a proud moment when in the trial you got it excluded and it was right the first time. But yeah, do you have any other favorite or proud moments?
You know, like the proudest moments are not, like, to me, are not when I win a case. It's when I, you know, when I come across a client, you know, that I served, you know, like a couple of years ago, and see how much better they are, how much they flourished, how they've, and then, you know, them basically like telling me I was really lost and I was very confused and broken. And, you know, thank you for your help. Like the proudest moments are actually those small moments when you feel like you made a difference in somebody's life. And I know that family law is a very difficult job. Most lawyers wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. It's very emotional. And a lot of people wonder, you know, why would anybody get involved in the mess that is divorce and do it for 50 people, 50 times a day? But, you know, my answer is that to me, like helping people in pain, sometimes it's a lot more gratifying than helping people who are already happy. You know, like you make lifelong impacts on people's life. I've actually like saved children. I've prevented kids from being abducted. I've prevented kids from being alienated. I've prevented kids from being molested and raped. I've prevented bankruptcies. I've made breakups more amicable. I've made sure that some couples who hated each other are now friends. You know, I've been an integral part of putting back a broken family in a different shape and form. And so that is my proudest moment. It's not necessarily winning a case, because I think even with the case that I told you, nobody wins. Everybody loses. You know, like these guys had a kid together too, you know, and now they're embroiled in years of litigation. So regardless of whether we win at the Supreme Court or not, I think at the end of the day, there is a loss to both sides. So, yeah, so my proudest moment is really helping people, making things better.
I think that's really full circle, because earlier you had talked about it, and we had talked about it at length, like doing what you're good at and where your strengths lie. And it's so clear, like, not only is it something you're interested in, practicing family law and helping people, but it's something you very clearly excel at. It doesn't take much more than one little Google search of you to know that you are, quite frankly, the best in the business. And it's so amazing to see. And I think, like, as someone who has taken one family law course ever and didn't do so well in it, I never really understood the scope of family law in the way that you just described it, and all of the different ways that it can help not only families, but individuals and communities solve so many problems other than just a breakdown of a relationship. Yes. And so I really appreciate you kind of illuminating that for myself and for everyone listening today, because it's helped me see family law in a different way than I envisioned it from my really terrible family law midterm and final exam in law school. So Lena, I was wondering, as we sort of come to the end of our conversation, what advice would you give to a younger version of yourself and to others who might be listening to this podcast and who are working towards achieving their wildest dreams?
Biggest advice would be worship failure, like praise it, take it in, accept it. It only becomes a catastrophe if you don't learn from it. It's there to teach you something, and nothing makes you grow more than failure does, in my mind. That would be my advice.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Lena, thank you so, so much.
Thank you for this incredible opportunity to be in the company of two incredibly smart women who are also making a huge, huge difference. And, you know, like talking about things that we don't talk about, or if we talk about, you know, we're looked at as somehow, whatever, a lot of words that I don't want to use, you know? So I really, really appreciate it. You guys are making a huge impact.
Oh, I really appreciate it. But it honestly has been such a pleasure just speaking with you. And Piper and I were joking that we could let this podcast go on for another hour or two. We would really enjoy it. I don't know if our listeners would like to listen to us for that much longer, but they definitely would want to listen to you.
Thank you.
Because this has been such an illuminating conversation. And I know you said that, you know, one of the biggest things you can learn is through your failure, but is there anything else that you've learned recently? We always like to finish our podcast with that question, and we'd love to learn what you've learned recently.
Recently I learned that, you know, because we're all type A and, you know, we work really hard, obviously burnout is a huge thing. And so I've always like, oh, I can't do it anymore. You know, I'm sure you guys say that, you know, here and there. I learned that we're some of the most resilient, and no matter how much like we fall down, we get up, you know, like that's something that makes me really proud in lawyers, you know, like this is not spoken about too much because we're kind of like, again, we're expected to, but I've learned recently that I tend to work harder than you know, my counterparts, and I don't give up easily. And that's, I think, a product of our training and being a lawyer. So, you know, there's parts of being a lawyer that I didn't appreciate as much as I do now. And, you know, I'm proud of that. You know, I'm happy to be a lawyer, and I'm happy that I found a way to channel that in the right direction. I think having a law degree is never a mistake. Nobody's ever that I know has ever regretted getting a law degree. When the regret starts is finding the wrong job in law. So I think one thing I learned is that we can all find our place in law, because the degree itself was never a mistake. So there's a puzzle that we need to fix a bit better, but it's not a broken thing.
Lena, every time you speak, you take my breath away. Thank you so much for joining us today and for sharing all of your knowledge and all of just like your incredible, invigorating energy. This has brought like new life into my day, and I hope to whomever's listening, it's done the same for you.
Thank you. I want to talk to you every day. You make me feel so good about myself.
It's all true. So thank you again, Lena. And for anyone looking for more information on all of the incredible work that Lena and YLaw are doing, you can find all of that information linked in the episode notes. And to stay up to date with the podcast, you can follow us on Instagram at Off the Tracks Podcast, and stay tuned for our next episode coming next Tuesday.
Thank you again to our partner, Lawbroker, Legal's first customer experience platform powered by lawyers. To learn more, visit lawbroker.com and see how you can join the movement to become a modern lawyer.